Continuing in Mitzvah Taf Yud Aleph 414, that we're not supposed to appoint a judge who's not expert in the Torah's rules to the position of an official dayan in the Jewish community. So we're discussing that you're not allowed to do. So we're discussing what type of dayan you specifically should appoint. So someone who's pleasant, so that the litigants can't say, "Well, why should I listen to you telling me what to do? You know, you're not, you fix yourself before you fix us." And they should be wise, and they should get along with people, and they should also be people who are known to not to give in to their Yetzirah, that they have a good self-control. And that they should not have a reputation for doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Uvichal anshei chayil, shiyeh lohem lev amitz. They should be courageous. Latzil oshuk miyad oshek. That somebody who's being wronged, they should have the courage to save him from his tormentor. Kinyan shenemar, vayakom Moshe vayoshyan. How do we know that Dayan has to be courageous? Starts all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu famously, when he arrived at Midian, so he saw that that there were some male shepherds who were trying to drive away the daughters of Yisro from tending to their sheep and feeding them, giving them water at the well. So Moshe saved them. So that means that Dayan is supposed to. So in other words, he could have just said, you know, those shepherds seem a little scary. You know, I'm not interested in getting involved in them. But no, he saw that there was something wrong going on. He took initiative and saved them. So not exactly a feminist narrative that the female shepherds, you know, they were wise and they had a job and they were shepherds, that they needed a man to save them. But nevertheless, that's the traditional chivalrous attitude that Kinyan Shinamar Moshe Yosham Uma Moshe Rabbeinu Avashalom Anov, that even though, what does it say about Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was the most modest person in the world? So even though he was unassuming and humble, nevertheless, when he saw that something was going on that was not right, so he had the courage and took the initiative to make sure that it was undone. That it was that he would fix it. Af kol dayan tzarich lios anav. So that's another thing, that a judge has to be humble. That again, even though the judge is in a position of power and over the Jewish community, nevertheless he can't let it go to his head. Yeah. So famously, you know, there's a story of Moshe Feinstein that somebody. So somebody asked him, if there was a newspaper article, I think in a secular newspaper, they wanted to do an article on Moshe Feinstein. So he said, the reporter said, I was told that you're the greatest authority on Jewish law in the world. You know, can you please explain that? He goes, I don't know. Jews, they came to me to ask a question, and they liked the answers that they got, so they told their friends, and they started asking me questions also, so the people started asking me. You know, he doesn't say, you know, yes, I'm the greatest authority, he said, but on the other hand, he has to know, you have to know your place. Like, you know, the famous story about Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky. At the end of his life, he lived in Eretz Yisrael, but he was, for many years, the head of the London Beis Din. So he was responsible for really heightening the standards of the Dayanus and the Kashrus in among the equivalent, I guess, of the Gemeinde, what you'd say, a community in London, as opposed to the what you call, again, a little anachronistic terminology, the Haredi community in London. Even though he himself was again what you might call Haredi, but he worked for the general community. So he was once fired a shochet. He fired a shochet for he wasn't sufficiently knowledgeable. He wasn't sufficiently religious. So the shochet sued the London Beis Din, in obviously the secular court system. So the judge they were talking. So the prosecutor, the lawyer for the defendant. I'm sorry, for the plaintiff. Said was interviewing Rev Abramsky on the stand, So he says, so Rabbi Abramsky, you had the audacity to fire my client, the Shochet. So I'd like you to tell the court why you should have a say in the matter. Why should we listen to you about who should be hired as a ritual slaughterer and who not? So Abramsky said, because I am the greatest authority on Jewish law in the British Empire. So the judge interjected and said, you know, Rabbi Abramsky, I'm a little surprised you would say such a thing, because I understand that all religious leaders are supposed to be humble and modest. So Rabbi Abramsky answered, Your Honor, you're absolutely right, but what can I do? I'm under oath. Yeah. So you have to be humble as well, but not overly humble. That also is not a good quality. Back to Moshe Feinstein, so there was also a famous story about him where he had to have, I think, a pacemaker put in. So before he had the operation, he sat for a long time with his son-in-law, Rabbi Dr. Moshe David Tendler, and had him explain to him in great detail exactly how the operation was performed. So Rabbi Tendler said, "Nu shver, what's the big deal? It's necessary for your health, and you have to get the operation. I don't understand why you're insisting on me explaining to you every single detail." So Moshe responded, "You know, I'm a little concerned that this could potentially render me a balmum, someone with a defect, and then I won't be able, when Mashiach comes tomorrow, I won't be able to serve on the Sanhedrin. I'm not worthy to serve on the Sanhedrin, but the fact is that in this generation, I might be one of the ones that will be chosen to serve on the Sanhedrin." So again, saying that is not a lack of anava. He has to be realistic. If somebody comes to you and asks a shaila, and you're the greatest authority, you know you know the answer, and you're the greatest authority. You can't defer to someone else. So you have to be, even though you have to be humble and honest, as everybody agrees. And Moshe was be'etzem when push comes to shove, you have to be realistic about what your status is in that generation. This is explained in Maseches Sanhedrin and other places all over the place. It's applicable in all places and all times. It's not talking about just the Sanhedrin, ancient smicha dayanim who were in Eretz Yisrael. In all generations, you cannot appoint a dayan who is not knowledgeable about Torah laws. Ve'over al zeh umina dayan she'enu chacham machmas osro tomidosav omeavososo machmas krovav. So if you violate this, again, if you're in a position to appoint judges, so either, I don't know, either on the, let's say, the board of directors of the Beis Din, or you're the Reish Galusa, that you're responsible for appointing the judges, and you appoint someone because he's rich, or he has good character traits, even though, all these things are not bad things, necessarily, but you have to be knowledgeable as well. Or because you are just really good friends, or because of nepotism. Relatives, you like his relatives, he's related to someone that really really rich or something. That's no good. Bitel aseze, you neglected to perform this positive commandment. Vancho gadol meod. Your punishment is very great. Shekol onesh dine sheker sheyadin oso dayin mechesur nidiyaso talu yalav ki huagorim. That all the judgments that will be falsely executed because of this judge not being knowledgeable is all hanging on him. And all the witnesses that he'll accept, the false witnesses, because he doesn't know how to examine them properly, that will all be hanging on his head. the person who appoints him. Umiklal mitzvah zo gamken lefi adome. So included in this mitzvah, shekol mi sheberu oso b'nei akol, Lemanos aleya mimunim l'shum inyan sheyasim kol hashgachaso v'chol daito lemanos mehem haruyim v'atovim also minu ishakal tzrichim. So he says that even though it's not explicit in the mitzvah, it's not necessarily, in terms of the spirit of the mitzvah, at least, is not limited to a dayan. That you're not allowed to appoint anyone to a position of authority or influence who's really not appropriate. That you should try to be as much as possible. You should try to appoint people who are appropriate for the position. So even, for example, maybe those of you who are on the board, presidents of shuls.
I was going to say that's the issue there, right?
What do you mean?
Women being presidents of shuls. This is the issue, that they might not be, worthy to lead the men, kind of thing.
No. The issue is an issue called srara that we learn now from the fact that the Torah says som tasim alecha melech. That in Judaism we have only kings, really. In terms of the official Davidic succession, we only recognize male heirs, like in Japan. I had this whole problem with the succession in Japan because the current emperor doesn't have any sons. They have a whole problem. Okay, but in other countries they do recognize female succession. But in the Lahavdil in Judaism, there have been queens, Lamaisa, in the Hasmonean dynasty, and there were a couple queens, but in the official Malchus, the official Jewish monarchy, they're not supposed to be queens. So we learn from that in general, you're not supposed to appoint a woman to a position of authority. So what's considered authority? You have a whole question there, and you also have the very important exception that if the woman is the best candidate for the task, if there's no man who's on the same level of doing the job, so then it is permissible. So that's, but in general, I guess the reason that many Rabbanim are not comfortable with women presidents, for shuls, A, it's a question, is it really svara? It probably is a form of svara, okay. But the question is, they think it's very unlikely that in a shul with many people that there's going to be, there's really not going to be any qualified male candidate, that they're going to have to resort to appointing a woman in a position. But you have to remember that, like Rav Schechter says, even if you don't agree with his exact formulation of it, that there's an issue of tznius here. I don't mean sleeve length. I'm talking about that is fundamentally all Jews are supposed to act in a refined, unassuming manner. So sometimes we have to, in order to be in a leadership position, so you have to act not in accordance with the way tznius is supposed to be. So since tznius is, a woman is more connected to tznius, although tznius is certainly applicable to men as well, to be in the background. But if nothing, no one else is available. So you hire the woman could be, it could take the position. But in terms of this, this has nothing to do with gender. So this, again, even if there were a qualified man, if you appointed a woman to be in a position of authority, if she were fully qualified, that would certainly not be a violation of this per se. That would only be an issue of the potential problem of srara. Amru chachamim below yogorim neish lemanos misheinu roy. So you should not be afraid of anyone, which is really the next mitzvah. But he's using that terminology already over here, that you shouldn't be afraid of anyone to appoint someone because you're afraid that somebody might be upset, to appoint someone who's not worthy. I have to make sure that all the appointments are worthy. Amru chachamim al mishehu mamid dayan sheinu hagun kilu hekim matseva. That if you appoint a judge who's not qualified, it's as if you erected a matseva, which is a type of place where you worship avodah zarah. Shenemar, velo sakim lecha matseva. Okay, that's why obviously not the simple understanding of that pasuk, but Chazal, as we know, sometimes take psukim not in their original context in order to drive home and emphasize a certain point. That if it's a place where not only are you appointing someone not qualified, but right around the corner you have someone who is qualified, a place of Talmidei Chachamim, there you could point anyone to be a judge who would be qualified. It's as if you planted an idolatrous tree. Shenemar, lo sitalecha ashera kolets eitzel mizbach Hashem Elokecha. That the Asherah is worse in some way because you plant it right next to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's altar. So here, it's even worse because it's right in the face of people who are qualified. Ve'od amru, shekol memana dayin machmas ashro al zeh nemar, Lo sasuni ti Eloi kesef Eloi zav. Again, not the simple understanding of the pasuk where it says, "You shall not make with me gods of silver and gods of gold." So obviously, the simple understanding means idols made of these various metals. But Chazal also interpreted to mean that somebody who's appointed because of his money, it's like he's a god of silver or a god of gold, made of silver or gold. He's only there not because of his real powers and his real authority, but rather because of his money. That if a judge paid for his position, this is even worse to a certain extent, that he's actively paying for it, that he wants himself to be appointed, not that the person who's in charge of appointing judges appoints him because of extraneous criteria. So if he gives money and he wants himself to be appointed, usur lamod mipanov, you're not allowed to get up for him. Umikilin harbe bichvodo, you're not allowed to honor him. The amra love, shatalis shemis atev bo tia beinecha kimir das hachamor. That his talis, again, people used to wear over garments like that with tzitzis all the time, especially when as a formal wear, that as a sign of distinction. So the talis that he enwraps himself with should be like the saddle of a donkey. Okay, so the idea is that you shouldn't get in the habit of treating him with respect. You're supposed to be mevazim. You're specifically supposed to degrade him. You shouldn't, even though you might think, hey, he's a judge, you know, how can I do this to him? No, you're supposed to specifically degrade him. So we have this problem sometimes, because you have, not exactly this situation, but sometimes, unfortunately, in these generations, you have, it's happened before, but we know it, they're specifically being prevalent now, that you have disgraced rabbis. So sometimes you're in a bind, because maybe, it depends exactly what he did, exactly how bad it was, and exactly, you know, what else he has going for him, but sometimes it might be appropriate, you know, to stop referring to him as rabbi and stop giving honor at all. So it's something to keep in mind, because you shouldn't get in your head that this is an appropriate religious authority. That's why you have there's a whole machlokas. V'derech chachomim arishonim sheborchin mil hismanos dayonim ela b'mokom she'ein godol mehem. That you should not try to be a dayan. That you should try to avoid being a dayan, unless you know that there's no one else more qualified than you, in which case you should. That you have to, again, like we were talking about Ramosha earlier, that you have to maintain an accurate perspective, and if there's really no one more qualified than you, then you shouldn't do it. So some people take this, in terms of COVID, to another degree, that many Rabbonim will refuse to be Mesader Kiddushin. They won't officiate at a wedding if they know that there's going to be any rabbi in attendance that they feel that is greater than they are. So that's one thing. But on the other hand, it used to be that Mesader Kiddushin was more of a, I guess, less emotional role. Now people are very touchy-feely about who they want to officiate at their wedding, and it's so important that it be someone that they're comfortable with and that they know and whatever. So I remember I was talking to an acquaintance of mine years ago, like who had just gotten smicha, or I don't know if he even had first, whatever. So he said, "Oh yeah, I was just Mesader Kiddushin at my friend's wedding." What? He doesn't know any real rabbis to officiate it? Why are you asking you to be Mesader? Why? It's no, because I'm so close with him, and he felt so meaningful to him that I should. Why? It's crazy. You should get a real rabbi. I don't understand. Whatever. But sometimes you're close with a real rabbi, but the real rabbi. So let's say, you know, you're very close with a certain big rabbi who's a Talmud of Rav Schechter. So, and you're a little closer to Rav Schechter, you know him a little bit, so you're inviting him to your wedding, but you would find it more meaningful if the other rabbi would be Mesader Kiddushin. But in many cases I've heard of that that the Rav, the Talmud, even if he's a very responsible authority, will refuse to be Mesader Kiddushin if Rav Schechter is in attendance, because they don't feel it's appropriate to be Mesader Kiddushin in front of a Rav that they consider greater. Okay, so that
Rav Schechter sort of say it's okay. fine. Can he, you know?
But he wouldn't do it anyway. I know there's someone at YU I know who's very, he will not be Masadar Kiddushin. Mm-hmm. Very, Rosh Hashiva, very, very well respected. He will not be Masadar Kiddushin. Rosh Hechter is in attendance. Rabbi Willig, so I Rabbi Willig was my Masadar Kiddushin, but so I invited Rosh Hechter to my wedding, but it wasn't clear if Rosh Hechter was going to come, so eventually he did not come. But Rabbi Willig said, you know, I know you're closer with me, you want me to be Masadar Kiddushin, but you should just know, and I'm not refusing, I'll still be Masadar Kiddushin if Rosh Hechter is there, but you should know, I really think it's more appropriate that if Rosh Hechter is in attendance, that you should ask him to be Masadar Kiddushin. I said, okay. So I said to Rosh Hechter, you know, if you show up, should be Masadar Kiddushin. So he says, okay, we'll see if I show up. So he didn't show up. So Rabbi Willig, no, he had another engagement. It had nothing to do with Masadar Kiddushin or not Masadar Kiddushin. So that's a moderate approach. That, you know, if you really prefer me, I'll do it. But I really think you should ask Rosh Hechter. But some will absolutely refuse to do it if there is a rabbi that they perceive as greater in attendance at the wedding. Famously, at Rosh Hechter's wedding. So the Masadar Kiddushin was his Rebbe, Rev Soloveitchik. He said he asked Rev Soloveitchik to be Masadar Kiddushin, but in attendance from the Kallah side was Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rev Soloveitchik filled out the ksuba, and he got the two edim up under the chuppah. He got the cup of wine, and he says, "Nu." He said, "Rav Moshe, come up and you recite the brachas, the brachas Erison." Okay, I couldn't protest at that point. So afterwards, Rav Hechter said, "You new Rebbe, I asked you to be Masadar Kiddushin, you know, not Rav Moshe." So Rav Soloveitchik said, "I was Masadar Kiddushin. Masadar Kiddushin means you arrange the Kiddushin. I made sure that it was done in the proper way. I calling up Rav Moshe Feinstein to recite the bracha was the proper way that this wedding should have been performed." It's also a chiddush, by the way, a shtickle that now it's become customary for the chassan's rebbe to be Masadar Kiddushin. That's the common practice, at least not in Europe, maybe, but in America and in Israel. So the chassan's rebbe is Masadar Kiddushin. That's not really traditionally the way it was done. Traditionally, it was the rav of the Kallah city that was Masadar Kiddushin. In other words, the wedding used to take place in that city, and it was the rabbi of the town that officiated at the wedding. It wasn't your choice that whoever you're close to or your rebbe was Masadar Kiddushin. But since we don't have town rabbis anymore, so for the most part, so then there are you would be usually it's become somehow that it's the chassan's rebbe who is Masadar Kiddushin. But in Europe, sometimes you do have something more like town rabbis. I remember I was staying with someone in Switzerland, and they were telling me many of their children married British people. So the wedding was in Manchester. So Manchester, they're basically, I mean, in terms of the, again, an anachronistic term, but in terms of the Haredi community, there's basically one Rav. So he's officiates at all the weddings that take place in Manchester, and it wasn't the Rav of the, it wasn't the Chassan's Rebbe who did it. But I don't know, maybe in America, in Elizabeth, I don't know. Not so much anymore, but 50 years ago in Elizabeth, there was one Rav, so I wonder, you know, if there was a wedding to take place in Elizabeth, so was he always going to be Masadar Kiddushin? Mitzvah Tov Tes Vav. 415. Shelo Yira Hadayin V'din Me'adam Ra. That when a judge is executing judgment, he should not fear a bad person. Shenimna Hadayin Milira Me'ish Miladin Din Emes. That if somebody who is going to be a bad person involved in your case, nevertheless, you shouldn't let your judgment be affected by this at all. The filo ish mazik, even if he's someone who causes damage, he's a threat. As punim, he's a. I say this. So what's a good translation for this? He has no sensitive. Oh, I don't know. He's arrogant, inflexible, or, I don't know. Ove ha-moach, thick skulled. You know, it doesn't, can't process things. He does, acts always according to rage and emotions, and it's not good. Ele yachto chesadin velo yasim libo klal lima sheyikre olav me'ahezek bishvil dino. that you shouldn't pay any attention to the fact that you might get into problems because of your judgment if you paskin against this wicked fellow. You shall not fear anyone. Veloshon Sifri, the Alachim Medrash says, Shema Tomar, Yori Ani Meish Ploni, Shema Yargeni, he might kill me. Oy. Yarugecham Ibn Nevisi, or someone in my family. Shema Yadli Ges Gedishi, maybe he'll set fire to my field. Oshema Yikzo says in the Tiosai, he's going to cut down all my plants. Tamalomar Lo Segurum Ibn Ish. Not allowed to be afraid. Again, you should take precautions to make sure he doesn't do these things. But you're not allowed to let this influence the judgment. Shurish mitzvah zok haskil haseichel meyed olav. That this is obviously rational, because if you allow these things to affect you, then everybody's going to just threaten the judges and always get their way, and it won't be there'll be no correct judgments. Dini amitzvah mashamer zichron levracha shneim shebo lefanecha ladi. And there are two people that came in front of you to judgment. Echad rach veechad koshet. That someone who's very nice, pleasant, and one strong. Achelo tishma es divrayan, before you hear their arguments. O afilu misha tishma es divrayan viata yodele chana denota, that you heard the preliminary arguments, but you're not sure how to paskin yet. Ata rashai lomar lahem eini nizkak lachem. You could say, sorry, I'm not going to be your judge today. Shema yischayev venim tzarodev acharadayin lahargu. I'm not interested in this guy coming after me. But once you hear the arguments and you realize what the psak is going to be, you're not allowed to say, I'm not interested in dealing with your case.
Can't recuse himself.
Recusing yourself is really for... as if you have a bias about the case originally. If you realize that you have a bias about the case later on, then you can. So in other words, if you realize somehow that, a relative is invested in the guy's company, and you realize you might paskin, even after you already heard the arguments and everything, you realize you might paskin wrong because of that, then you do have it, you can. But the point is, you're just not allowed to refuse to serve as the dayan because you're afraid that someone's going to kill you, I don't know, or harm you in another way. V'chein talmid hayoshiv lifnei rabo v'raz chus la'ani v'chova la'ashir einu rashai lio shoseg. That not only this, to be the main judge, but sometimes you have students who are sitting at the court cases, and they are supposed to learn, but if they have an idea, so they should pipe up. So if the student says, hey, I realize that this rich person really should lose the case because of this halachic argument, then he's not allowed to be silent because he's afraid that the rich person is going to hire the mafia to get him. Shenemar lo segur ibnei ish, you should not fear anyone. Then when it comes to judgments, you're not allowed to be afraid. You have to do truth, always truth. So this is obviously an appropriate concept in other areas as well. That you shouldn't be afraid to voice the truth because you're afraid of damage. Again, it's not the technical, maybe, but the same, just the same way as in the last mitzvah, it was also within the spirit that you should make sure that all appointees are well qualified. So it's well within the spirit of this mitzvah as well to make sure to not to fear when you are voicing the truth. So use this expression in halachic literature also, that a posek will say, even though all these great rabbis disagree with me, I really think they're wrong. I'm paskening the way I think. Lo saguru mipnei ish. Obviously, the rabbi is not going to come kill him for paskening the wrong way, but and it might be dead. But he says that you are not allowed to fear them just because there are a lot of people on that side. Again, it doesn't mean you should respect them. You should take their opinion with appropriate weight. But if you really disagree and you're qualified to disagree, then you're fully entitled and required to rule in accordance with the way you think is the truth, as opposed to just being afraid of your reputation also, that in terms of there are some poskim that really feel that the halacha is a certain way, and they're afraid to say it because, again, they don't necessarily have to volunteer it. It depends on the situation, okay, whatever it is, but the that if it's against what people think, you know, the mindset of people, and you, you're afraid of stirring the pot, I mean, sometimes you can keep quiet. Again, that's not always an obligation, but when you're asked, then you have to give your honest-to-goodness answer.
Wait, the board.
That's a great example that in certain shuls, so the rabbi is under the gun because he is going to get fired if he does some things to upset the board. So it's a very delicate balancing. And certain things you could compromise on, maybe, but if there's a real halachic serious issue, then yeah, you're not allowed to. You can't pass in a different way because you're afraid that the board is going to fire you. Yeah,
right. So there is a thing in Hor. That's a special thing with the Sanhedrin.
Yeah. So then you have the Sanhedrin rules a certain way, and you're a member of the Sanhedrin, and you were outvoted, and you continue to publicly teach in accordance with your opinion, then you might get into the shaila of a zokin mamre, which means that you're a rebellious elder, and you could be put to death for that. But that's a different mechanism. Nowadays, we don't have. That's an official ruling vote of the Sanhedrin. This is nowadays it doesn't work like that. Nowadays, everyone listens to their rabbi, and there are tons of different opinions. That's just the way the Torah works nowadays.
Can one argue? Can a rabbi today argue with a previous generation rabbi?
In theory. I mean, if you're smart, you're going to know your place. I mean, but there are. In theory, it's certainly possible. I mean, it's a lot of times. Reb Moshe Feinstein, for example, he used to disagree with he disagreed with earlier poskim all the time. He didn't learn much achronim. He used to just learn very chazard many times the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries and the Shulchan Aruch, and he used to poskim based on what he thought was correct, based on those based on his understanding. More of the sources. He didn't really take into account so much what other Acharonim said. That was his style, and he got attacked for it. That people felt that that's not really correct, that you should really follow other Acharonim. As well known, Hungarian Jews view the Chassam Sofer as like the ultimate authority. So this includes Hungarian Hasidim and Hungarian non-Hasidim, regular Ashkenazi Jews. Like Chassam Sofer was not Hasidish, so important to know. He was it was a Yek actually. So I know someone who's a son of a Hungarian Rav, and he learned by Reb Moshe in the Lower East Side at MTJ. So when a new volume of Igros Moshe came out, Reb Moshe Feinstein's Tshuva Sefer, he took it to his father. He said, "Oh, my Rosh Hashiva wrote this beautiful Sefer. Maybe you want to take a look at it." So he opens up the Hungarian Rav, opens up the Tshuva, the Sefer, you know, starts to read the Tshuva, says he disagrees with the Chassam Sofer. So his son is trying to explain, yeah, that's his derech. You know, he's... He learns the Gemara and he paskins how he sees fit. He paskins how he wants. So the father says he disagrees with the Chassam Sofer. Closed the sefer, put it on the shelf. Never once again looked in the Igros Moshe for anything.
His son stayed in yeshiva.
What? Yeah, I think his son stayed in yeshiva. Yeah, but
there are a lot of stories. People like the Chazan. I mean, like. Such as the Chazan Ish.
Yeah, the Chazan.
And I mean, these giant people.
Right. The Vilna Gaon, famously, he had a completely different. He didn't care for. He did more than that. He went back. He learned the Gemara and he paskin however he wanted. He didn't even care if Rishonim disagreed with him. Okay. I mean, again, when you're a certain. You have a certain temperament and a certain. There are all these stories about the Vilna Gaon about how he. He didn't really. He was talking about philosophy of halachic decision making and jurisprudence, but all these stories about how the Vilna Gaon didn't want people to follow him. That's why it's a little bit humorous that you have all these communities, especially in Eretz Yisrael, like Zilbermans, they live in the Old City, that do everything according to the rulings of the Vilna Gaon. So we don't have the rulings of the Vilna Gaon and everything, and what he happened to write about, or what his students happened to take note of. But it's not really what he wanted. His students asked him many times, you know, it's very hard to figure out what you really hold. Just write your own Shulchan Aruch. You know, the Shulchan Aruch sometimes brings different opinions. He says this, and Yesh Misha Omer, and then the Ramah writes. the Ashkenazi practices. Yesh, you know, but the min Ashkenazi minhag is this. All these, even in the Shulchan Aruch, which was to be the final word, you only have all these different opinions. So the student said to the Vilna Gaon, Rebbe, please make it easy for us. Write your own Shulchan Aruch. Just go according to the Seder of the Shulchan Aruch and just write one opinion, your final conclusion, the way everything should be. So the Vilna Gaon answered, you know, I tried, but Shemayim prevented me from doing it. Because the answer, the idea being that you had all these unique and singular opinions, but Kosh Baruch Hu didn't want that the whole history and tradition of halacha decision making should be completely overturned. That's not to say that there might be certain situations where, you know, a modern posek, you know, learns the whole sugya and he finds the Vilna Gaon's opinion very compelling and very appropriate for the situation. So he might be asking like the Vilna Gaon, but systematically to undermine everything is apparently not something that Kosh Baruch wanted, and that the Vilna Gaon himself did not feel was appropriate. But the Balatanya Shulchan Aruch, his restatement of the Shulchan Aruch was not a whole new thing. It was basically the Ramah's rulings combined with certain of the later commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, like especially the Magen Avraham. The Balatanya was not presenting his new opinions about everything. He was just digesting the previous, for the most part. Maybe he offered his new rulings where he felt he should rule like, I don't know, the Taz instead of the Magen Avraham in one place. But overall, it was just a restatement of the existing halachic tradition, and maybe again with his knetch on it, but it wasn't a whole new endeavor. Okay. V'noheges mitzvah zo b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zacharim ki lohem hamishpat. This applies to males because they're the ones who are doing judgment. But again, with the spirit of the mitzvah, so it could apply to a woman also. That if she feels the truth is in a certain way and she's qualified to express an opinion, so she's required to do so. The overall zevelo rotza lodun mishiyivoda mishiyodea mehechan adin nota that meyesu. If you violate this, and once you know more or less how the paskening is going to go. So if you're just afraid of the one of the litigants that you violate this commandment, so if you actually do pasket in the wrong way because you're afraid of one of the litigants, over alav zeh, you certainly violate this commandment. You also violated the commandment that you're not allowed to pervert justice. Okay, let's make a little bit of a beginning. We're not going to get too far. But Parshas Vayischanan. So Parshas Vayischanan is obviously chock full of really relevant and practical mitzvos. You have the restatement of the Ten Commandments. You have Kriya Shema. You have all sorts of very practical things. So here we go. Parshas Vayischanan. Yesh b'shmone mitzvos asei v'arba mitzvos lo asei. There are 10 positive commandments and 4 negative commandments.
Eight.
What?
8.
What did I say?
Shmona.
I said 10?
Yeah.
I meant 8. Okay. There are 8 positive commandments and 4 negative commandments. Mitzvah Tav Tezayin, 416. Shilolis Avos Mashabiyada Chenu B'nei Yisrael. We're not supposed to long for things that someone else owns. Oh, yeah? Okay. So not just money, it could be, it's anything. Cars, wife, whatever. Yep. You want to see what he says? It's also interesting that he says it's only for Jews. So the technical command applies to Jews maybe, but it seems that the reasoning should apply to non-Jews as well, because not allowed to steal from non-Jews either. So if the whole point is eventually that it's going to lead you on the path of stealing, so... Why should it only apply to Jews? Well, it says specifically in the Ten Commandments, lo sisave beis, what does it say? Beis reyecha, whatever. But again, the spirit should apply to all people as well.
Right, it says anything that belongs to one of our fellow Jews.
Mm-hmm. So don't desire that.
Possessions.
Possessions, okay.
Oh, and it says it's clear from the Chinuch's wording that the Torah does not mean to forbid merely experiencing a desire for someone else's possessions if one promptly dismisses that desire from his mind. Rather, it's allowing the desire to take residence in one's mind that's forbidden.
Right, so this is Sefer Chinuch is going to discuss. So you have an issue with the idea of thoughts. How could the Torah legislate thoughts if you... Right, but that's just going to pop into your head. But the idea is whether you dwell on it or whether you you dismiss it or not. That we should specifically think and intentionally ponder something that's owned by a fellow Jew. That when you're specifically dwelling on how much you want it, you're going to try to get it. Even if this guy is not willing to sell it to you, if you want it and you say, hey, I want to, can I buy your Ferrari? And he says, sure. That's not a problem. The problem is if he doesn't want to part with it, you shouldn't desire it. Whatever you take, even he doesn't want to either exchange it for something or sell it. Oh, bechoska, imonuchal ben yinacher. Maybe you take it forcibly. So the Rambam writes, you might think, what does it say in the first 10 commandments in Parshas Yisro? It says, lo sachmod. Because remember, we were discussing last time that in Sefer Dvarim, you know, people ask all these academics or who ask all these questions, why does it say different in Sefer Dvarim? So what does it say in Sefer Shmos? You know, different versions? So the answer is that sometimes Kodesh Baruch Hu put a little knach in Sefer Dvarim to keep your attention. He doesn't want to repeat exactly what it says in Sefer Shmos to teach an additional lesson. And this was very much on the pattern of ancient legal codes. So you might think that just putting a little knach, that in the last commandment of the Ten Commandments in Sefer, in Parshas Yisro, is Lo Sachmod, and the end of the Ten Commandments in Parshas Vayeshanan is Lo Sezavah. So it's just basically the same thing. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to give two themes, you know, about this matter. No, Rambam writes, there are two different negative commandments. Shalav de Lo Sachmod yimna enu milakachas b'shum tzad bein bedomim shlo bedom mashekana Zulaseinu. So Lo Sachmod is more advanced than Lo Sezave. That means that you're forcibly buying it. That you're literally taking it, even if you give money, and you're forcibly making him sell it. Im einu chafetz limchor osadover, if he doesn't want to sell it. Belavze de Lo Sezave, im nenu afilu yisave bo bezoch libeinu. Lo Sachmod is not inside. Lo Sachmod is if you actually have to do something. But Lo Sezave is it's the first step. First you do Lo Sezave, then you do Lo Sachmod, then you steal. If you're begging him. So again, for the house next to the yeshiva in Lakewood, so if you just ask them pleasantly once and then go on your merry way and you drop the matter from your heart, so that's okay. But if you really focus on how much you want this particular house, you're over on Lo Sezave. And if you go and you beg them on a daily basis to sell it to you, and you offer throw money in their face and you beg them, and finally they say, okay, enough! That's Lo Sachmod. Or even if you, again, you're not stealing it, but you offer something else that you like. Maybe you have two pieces of jewelry of equal weight and equal technical value, but you really like the way the other one looks, and you want to switch it. But the other person doesn't want to switch it. Even though it's a progression, that the first Lo Sezave leads to Lo Sachmod, nevertheless, the two different negative commandments. You see the difference between the two. Yeah.
I have somebody at the stores on Lakewood. Somebody wanted somebody else's house.
Yeah.
And offered them so much money that they couldn't say no.
Okay.
But basically, the person was doing something wrong.
No. If your house is worth... If you really are happy with your house and you don't want to sell it, and your house is worth $800,000... And somebody comes to you and says, not over and over again to force you, comes and says, you know, I'm going to give you $2 million for your house. Okay! You know, I really am happy with my house. I don't really want to part from it. But it's totally...
Not over or not over.
That's not over anything. No.
Only if he continuously badges.
Right, and if he tries to, if he forcibly wants him to part from it without the, but the, here the person believes Shalim, again, even if he doesn't fundamentally want to sell his house, so for the right price he would.